You're listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast. Our guest today is Stephen Stomberg, CFO of Bittrex Global.
This episode is brought to you by the Ternio Block Card. Earn up to 6.38% back on every merchant purchase with no limits. Block Card is the easiest, cheapest, and best way to use your cryptocurrency to buy what you want, when you want, at over 50 million merchants globally. Block Card has no exchange fees, no deposit fees, and no transaction fees. You can sign up at getblockcard.com, deposit funds, and instantly get access to your virtual card. We'll mail you a physical card too. You can also sync it with Apple or Google Pay. If you hold cryptocurrency, then you need to get Block Card today. Visit getblockcard.com.
I'm your host, Dustin Plantholt. Join us as we dive into the world of economics, politics, tech, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. For even more crypto-related news, sign up at news.bitcoin.com or follow us on Twitter at Bitcoin.com. Now let's bring on our guest. Stephen Stomberg, welcome to the Bitcoin.com podcast.
Thank you. Well, pleasure to be here today.
Now, Stephen, tell us, in terms of Bittrex Global, I mean, are you located around the globe? Or because the last time we talked, you're here in the States.
So Bittrex is in the States, the main company, but Bittrex Global is global. It's everything ex-US. So the company itself is headquartered in Liechtenstein, which is a small principality between Switzerland and Austria, for those who don't know their geography. But they also passed a blockchain act. So it's very crypto favorable jurisdiction. We moved the company there in October, the international part of the company. So all of the clients of Bittrex, and if you go to bittrex.com, the website outside of the US, you're automatically redirected to Bittrex Global. You're going through the Liechtenstein entity, but US citizens and US residents are going through the US exchange. So now, there's really two separate exchanges.
Got it. Now, you have a pretty amazing background. So I got to look your bio up and said, I actually know this guy. He's really smart. So what made you so excited? Like, why crypto? I mean, you came from a world of finance. What made you jump over?
So I jumped more than two years ago. Headfirst into it. I'd already been interested in this space, and then I just sort of dove in. I think what's interesting about crypto, you know, in addition to, you know, whatever Goldman calls it, a tulip bubble, and, you know, it definitely gained a lot of attention in 2017. But if you look at some of the dynamics around it, it just reminded me, first of all, I think crypto is a financial services business. Crypto and blockchain is just the way that it settles. And I think a lot of people in the industry, they're not really from a finance background. They're mainly from a tech background, or they're just real crypto people. They see it as a technology business. It's not. It's a financial services business, or at least that's how the regulators will see it. And I think that's where, you know, we can talk about that. But I think a lot of these companies just don't understand that they've stumbled into the most heavily regulated industry on planet Earth.
And it seems that way. I mean, well, I read an article that came out a couple of years ago where JP Morgan said that Bitcoin is a fraud. I mean, fraud has a pretty big implication, yet some of the people that we've had on this show, the technologies that they're building, the platforms that they have, and what's happening in the space seems to be the opposite of that.
Oh, well, last week, JP Morgan said it's great. So Goldman said it's still horrendous. And JP Morgan said Bitcoin's here to stay. Look at their most recent research report. It's very positive. So they said it's an interesting asset class. We think it will have long-term, you know, crypto's here. Bitcoin may or may not be the vehicle, but, you know, in the short term, it's very speculative, but we do see a place for blockchain. So JP Morgan obviously is now in the business and they can make money from it. So they're very happy for their clients
to start allocating. But at one point though, they were talking about it being a fraud. So between that point and them talking about it, they must have been investing in the space.
Of course. Well, I think what's interesting, so 2 years ago when Jamie Dimon famously came out and said, I think, you know, it was like for criminals and it was fraud and it was money laundering. Concurrently, the London office of JP Morgan, which is part of the same company, was very busy trading in Bitcoin. So I think that's where the tail was, why he didn't even know what the head was doing. Or maybe they did know and he was just talking both sides of the book. You know, you just don't know what their real agendas are.
And I think that's the challenge, is that, so let me kind of dive into that, the benefits behind the space to blockchain and Bitcoin and transaction fees, that it seems to be a better model. I mean, talk about that. You're in a business, you've got a company where you're accepting payments through traditional banking systems, and you're giving up, you're a retailer. you're giving up 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 some percent of the time of the total back to someone that's processing that payment. I mean, doesn't Bitcoin change that?
How about if you just want to wire money from a bank, it takes a few days. Or if you want to buy equities, it's T+3 settlement, which means trade date, and then 3 days later, the shares will show up in your account or portfolio. So I think that the whole financial services system is, you know, it's based on a very old infrastructure. I mean, they have no incentive to fix it. Like Ripple's trying to enforce a fix, but I don't think Swift wishes to be fixed. So I think what's interesting is that you just change the whole thing altogether. This puts it upside down on its head, which is why, going back to your original question where we got on this topic, why did I get interested in the space? It just reminded me of, you know, financial services, some of the like hedge funds in 1980. Like it was this brave new world where the very few people had trod into it, lots of margin, and it was going to really innovate financial services. And I don't think we've seen anything like that. This, to me, is just so fundamental. It's so early days still. And I think, you know, it's all about convergence between, you know, real world finance, which we're now starting to see, Fidelity, JP Morgan, they're all dipping their toe into this. And then you've got the startup players who've gone out and built exchanges. And, you know, we don't know in 5 years from now which players will be here, like who will be the winners and losers in the space. So I think it'll make a fascinating case study.
Yeah, it definitely will be. And one of the things that I'm kind of seeing from my lens and the guest that we've had on is talking about now that the central banks and now that these institutions around the world are paying attention, my question is, but you've got the smartest people on the planet most of the time working for you, you have access to, why didn't you do this years ago? Like, why didn't you give back and lower the cost so that a consumer, an individual can send money to a family member and pay next to nothing? Like, they could have done this, could they not?
So you're asking a question. So let's analyze the question. So I'm a bank or I'm some sort of service provider. I run a really inefficient business model with high barriers to entry and lots of fees for me, and it's inefficient. And the more inefficient it is, like, what's my incentive to innovate and give away my margin? Zero, like none. In fact, I'll fight tooth and nail to keep the business the way it is and the entrenched business model. So I think that's the answer to your question. They know it's screwed up and they don't care because they'll never say that.
There seems to be incentives for them to keep it the same way.
Exactly. Which is why they say and crypto is scary. It's not just about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is an interesting asset, but it's the use case. It's just one use case of blockchain. Blockchain fundamentally changes the way the entire banking business, from fiat and just simple bank wires to credit card payments, securities, everything will be turned upside down on its head. And the fee revenue model for these banks will disappear. So I think they're okay. They'll do it if they're forced to. Now they realize that they have no choice. So then they'll just begrudgingly embrace it as a way to preserve their business, or at least have reduced margin or the optionality for a reduced margin on a business rather than not be in the business at all.
Interesting. Now, I have to ask a question, because this is a show where we talk about politics, but we're not talking about or going against certain political leaders. That in the United States, a certain individual, the president, as well as another very successful, famous person, got up and they talked down on Bitcoin. I mean, what do you think drives that? Because they feel what they feel. I mean, in life, we feel what we feel. But why is there such a negative connotation towards Bitcoin? Why is it because I will tell you, a great book I read many years ago, will not name the cartel member, but a person who had a certain book, that he had $40 billion at the time they finally caught him. $40 billion. And it probably wasn't in cryptocurrency, was probably in fiat or something they could quickly get out of. That if you look at traditional currency, cash, well, isn't that something that should be a bigger threat than something that is digital and can be tracked on a ledger of some sort or on a blockchain?
Of course, but that's not the, but it's all about control. So so that's exactly, what's their real agenda? So it's a real agenda that they'll say about that, about money laundering, and it's all about that. And I watched a panel where somebody from the federal government said, oh yes, you know, we're afraid of Bitcoin because at least with cash, we know where it is. Really? But I've heard that if you actually test like currency, there's like traces of cocaine on most of it. Now with COVID, it's actually paper currency might even disappear, because apparently it's very efficient at transmitting disease.
Sure.
So there's real talk about getting rid of paper currency. But pre-COVID, that was their sort of their traditional shtick. You know, but like with blockchain, you can trace every single, even if there, it can be used just like dollars were used.
Of course, for
nefarious
purposes.
You can trace it much better than you can. And I think that's, but what's the real agenda? Do they want to give up? You know, they could, who prints the U.S. dollar? The federal government. So that's seniorage, right?
So then there's,
right now,
then there's the US, fear. There's fear. And again,
so do you want to lose your ability to print currency? That's the real issue. They're not going to say that. Sure. But of course, they don't control Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They can't print it.
Absolutely. And by the way, I am not an anarchist. I am for my president. I want our country to succeed. I want all countries around the world to do well. It just seems to be very interesting that it appears, or at least what they are saying, is so anti something that, from what I've seen, brings a lot of benefits. I mean, the ability to track transactions, their ability to look at prescriptions and make sure that they're going to the right places. And now you can even send checks over a blockchain through Ripple. I mean, there's so many amazing use cases that are barely scratching the surface. You're a retailer that brings in $1 million a year through traditional credit cards. By bringing in a process for crypto, could save you $30,000-$40,000. Just one company.
So I think I can answer, Dustin. I think I can see where you're going with this. I can answer all of these questions. It doesn't matter what you, like all of these sort of examples you're giving of people talking you down. Have you ever met anybody who will willingly go out there and talk themselves, their own job out of existence? No. So I think that's the answer to the question.
That is the root. And that's what I needed to understand, is this is something that can,
it's something crypto specific. It's innovation specific. So I think, you know, this is an old speech and I'm older than you. So I think when hedge funds came out in the 80s, oh, these are all terrible. Now they're so boring that they're just in every pension plan on planet Earth. So in fact, they're not even interesting. But they were like the scary new thing in the 80s. You know, every new innovation. Plus, I mean, even the internet, when that came out, oh, this is all scary and horrible. And then now it's
who's going to use an email?
One.
I mean, I'm telling you, no one's going to use it.
Amazon was a bookstore when it came out. That's it.
Yeah.
Ooh, and you could go shopping for books 24/7. That was so cool.
People were laughing at Steve Jobs when it came to the iPad. They're like, I'm not sure that's the name you should call it.
And this is attacking the financial services industry, which is one of the most well-funded, highly regulated, and that's where they can use the regulations to go after it. But that's where I also think the innovators here, you know, if you're Steve Jobs and you're disrupting technology, you're not really, you know, people will still fight you, but you're not violating regulations or rules. Like, you know, it's not a regulated business. It's just a business. You can make a computer. Like, yes, there's laws. You can't do illegal things, but you're not going to stumble into making a computer that operates against some regulation. It's just a computer. However, in financial services, and that's where, like, if you're running all these crypto exchanges, they are operating in established industries. So their innovation, you can't just ignore the fact that there's securities laws and that there's rules around selling certain types of investments to individuals. I think that's where, going back to the early, those are the things which I think are concerning.
Fascinating.
And I think that's not, so I think you're right. Rather than, and they are ignoring it. I mean, it's amazing. Some of these exchanges that we compete against from Bittrex literally don't do any KYC or AML, or they lie and say they do. The regulators don't go after them, and they're allowing so much to happen, and yet they waste all of their time screaming about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency being evil when it's not. It's a great innovation, yet they're allowing infractions to happen under their nose, so they're just not acting very quickly.
Interesting insight. So I'm new to the space, because many of our listeners around the world are just getting in. Nah, they haven't always heard the good. They've heard someone being hacked. They've heard the negative side, but then they've also heard the stories of the Bitcoin millionaire, the person that invested. I mean, setting expectations. You're new. You're excited about this new asset class. You're willing to take more risk. How do you begin? Because you're inheriting everyone that's come before you, the good and the bad, the good actors, the bad actors. How do you start, Stephen?
So I think if you want to buy, if you've never done it before, I mean, buying a Bitcoin is probably the easiest way to get in. I mean, there's all these things called altcoins, and you can read. There's so much free research about the space. But, you know, think of a token as just a way to invest. And there's different kinds of tokens. There's utility tokens. And then there's what's called a security token. The difference is one is a security under securities laws, like Apple stock, and has a different set of regulations. That market hasn't really developed yet. But you have to, so most of the tokens that are out there are utility tokens, or the issuers think they are, but some of them are in trouble because then the SEC comes back and say, oh, actually, that's a security, and then they get in to all sorts of lawsuits. You don't want to inadvertently buy one of those. So I think, you know, with any new investment asset class, it's high risk. So just allocate, step one, like how much of this are you going to allocate of your portfolio? So if you're risk averse, you know, don't put more than 1 or 2% of your net worth into crypto. Just dip your toe in. And then like any asset class, what's the most liquid, biggest token that's out there? Well, that's Bitcoin. So I would just, by default, if that's your first investment, why not start there? That's a good way to dip your toe in and just learn the basics. How do I buy this? How does it settle? Watch it trading, learn about the price movements. And then as you become more into the market, then you could look at some of the more exotic or esoteric coins, which is the same thing you would do in the stock market. You're going to start out buying Apple stock, and then you might work your way into buying new issues or small penny stocks. You're not going to do that as your first investment. Right. So I think it's the same analogy I'd use for like real world investing.
Yeah.
And then where are you going to buy these coins from? Are you going to go to some dodgy online thing you've never heard of? Or will you go to a more well-known regulated entity? I would recommend using the more well-known regulated entity. So in the crypto world, I mean, Bittrex, if you're in the US, you can go to bittrex.com. Outside of the US, it's the same URL, but it's Bittrex Global. And, you know, we're regulated in Liechtenstein, we're regulated in the US. You know, there's other regulated competitors out there, Coinbase, Kraken. I mean, there's other good exchanges, but I would start with one that's sort of law-abiding and has some sort of regulatory framework around it, just like you would do with a bank. And I think that's how I would recommend getting started.
Interesting. Well, appreciate you sharing your insight and guidance on it. So where do you see the space kind of going forward? I mean, you go out 2 years, 5 years, because it's a very fast-moving environment from wallets to different exchanges to the new blockchains that are coming out or different crypto platforms. I mean, where do you see it headed ultimately? Do you think that the entire world is going to embrace this thing at some point or?
Well, I think, so yes, the whole world will embrace this. I think it's really two sort of tracks. There's the blockchain and how you can settle transactions on blockchain. And there's so many different use cases just for blockchain, which go beyond just cryptocurrency. So I think that's happening. And then you have sort of what's happening financial services wise, like with exchanges and developments. I think you're going to see one of the big trends you're going to continue to see is convergence, meaning real world players are going to start to go into the space. And then you're going to see the new startups moving into their world, like doing banking and other services. And eventually I think there'll be a consolidation play where, you know, the startups will get taken out and it'll just get morphed into the existing players. I think the other sort of trends you'll see, you know, again, securities tokens. So we haven't really seen that yet. You need a securities license to do securities. That's harder to do than just issue tokens out of the Cayman Islands or the Seychelles or wherever half of these unregulated exchanges operate. So I think for that, you know, there's a huge market opportunity. And there it goes really around cost savings. So you can turn the whole equity issuance model up on its head. A, you can have 24/7 trading. Remember, crypto markets operate 24/7. You can trade Bitcoin the whole time. If you want to trade equities, like the London Stock Exchange is only open from like 8:30 to 4:30, and you can only trade during business hours, and then you'll get your shares 3 days after you've actually done the trade, 3 business days. So if you trade on a Friday, your shares will show up like the next week on a Wednesday. So if you can digitize an equity, even just Apple stock, then imagine if you could trade 24/7, what that would do. And then also the settlement costs and how that would change the whole liquidity profile. What if you take an illiquid asset and shove it into a token? It's a security token. So where one of the biggest use cases we're seeing, real estate, because it's really expensive to, there's all sorts of custody costs. So that's an industry ripe for cost save in terms of, you know, tokenizing portfolios. So that's, there's a whole like backlog of stuff.
That's incredible. I mean, it sounds like there's so many unique use cases out there that this solves in many ways the spend problem, does it not, within crypto?
Absolutely. Then you think about the diversification. So you could have, if you're sitting with Bitcoin, and then what can you do with it? Well, if I could buy, oh, here's a property portfolio in Europe, and I can buy it in a really small chunk, in a bite size that I could have never bought without tokens, and then it also trades 24/7. So I've made a completely illiquid asset class I could never buy before, liquid and tradable 24/7. That's so innovative. That's hugely innovative. And that's nothing that the banks are doing. That it just doesn't exist right now because technology didn't allow it to exist.
Now, where do you see stable coins going, Stephen? Do you think that that is a market that will continue to grow? Do you think central banks will come out with their own?
I think that market will continue to grow in the absence of a central bank issued coin. Obviously, if you have, you know, Tether versus a digital dollar, you'd rather have the digital dollar.
Right.
Like there'd be no need. That's the stable coins exist as a step. It's pre central bank issuance.
And what is a stable coin? Because they, again, people out there in the world or even those seasoned, many times they don't really understand it. What is a stable coin?
So in the case, so Tether, which is the most famous, you know, stable coin or infamous stable coin, depending, you know, in some of the recent news. But that is basically the idea is you have a token and it's backed by a dollar bill and it's worth $1. So it's a digital dollar. And that enables you to move dollars around, but it stays in blockchain. It's not a bank wire. So you can send, so if you want, if I want to pay you a dollar and you accept stable coins, I can send you, or $10, I can pay you invoices in Tether. They instantly settle. There's no bank involved. And I can just pay you in stablecoin. It's much easier.
Wow.
Like right now, if you want to wire dollars from Europe to the US, first of all, most of the banks can't even do it because their correspondent bank doesn't like crypto. So if the money is earned in crypto, you're not even allowed to touch dollars. So there's huge issues. And then even if you can, you need the correspondent bank information. I need to have like the intermediary. I have to then have your wire information. And then it's going to take 3 or 4 days for it to happen. And then it bounces half the time. And then like, you know, it would take me 2 weeks of a palaver of work just to send you $100, where I can do it instantaneously with a blockchain, with a stablecoin.
That's
but great, the stablecoin doesn't change in value is the idea. So whereas a Bitcoin is an asset in itself that can fluctuate in price, the stablecoin is just, it's always worth a dollar.
It maintains. And blockchain, what is the best explanation that you've ever heard that you can dumb down for someone like me? Like, what is this blockchain people hear about?
It's a unique digital code that is run on a decentralized computer system that everybody can have access to, that gives you full paper trail of how an asset moves around. So if something's done on the blockchain, so Bitcoin, for example, you can trace every single Bitcoin. There's a perfect history in a way that you don't have for real world assets.
I mean, that sounds like perfection. Like it has fixed many of the problems that many other currencies around the world have faced.
Because you can verify the payment, you've taken away control from a centralized system, and it gives you full transparency, which is, again, if I'm trying to make a lot of money, inefficiency and lack of transparency is how you make money. And if you remove that, then people get threatened because how do they make money? Oh, and they actually have to be good at their job. They can't just show up and clip coupons, as we say. So I think that's the real issue. And that's why you hear so much negativity around this. I also think it's a lack of understanding too. I mean, I think people either don't get it and they just say it's evil, or they actually do get it and they have to trash it because it's a threat.
Yeah. Well, you have this unique way, which is why I really respect your opinion, of taking it down from an MBA level to a Dustin level, and people around the world that really are excited about this space. They want to learn more about it, but there are many times it can seem a little scary, complicated, and it can be a little overwhelming. So Stephen, thank you so much for sharing your story. And how do we find you? How do we find Stephen
Stomberg? How do you find me? So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm at Bittrex Global. So you can find me on the Bittrex website, or you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. And just generally, I'm on Telegram. So if people want to reach out, if they're interested in Bittrex and Bittrex Global, you know, always happy to talk to listing teams or investors. That's our job.
Fantastic. Thank you again, Stephen, for coming on the Bitcoin.com show.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've listened to another episode of the Bitcoin.com podcast. Subscribe at news.bitcoin.com, where your journey begins.